do with the five of them on the council and following on from Mayor Potter's leadership is we support and we fund the things that we believe with you are going to help get to where we need to be. I know that Mayor Adams is very disappointed he wasn't able to be here today. He's in Spain helping to with our economic development needs to keep jobs in Portland, which again, that's a fundamental need that everybody has, is to have meaningful work, whether paid or unpaid, and for many folks, it needs to be paid. So that's where he is. I remember the conversation that he and I had before he was mayor and before I was a commissioner. We were still elects. And he said, the Human Rights Commission and the Office of Human Relations needs some focused attention. It's so important, and I know I'm going to be so busy that I'm not going to be able to give it the attention that it deserves, and that was when I asked if I could have that responsibility and that honor, because it has been a lot of work. As I said, there's four employees. That's not many staff to do the work that needs to be done for 550,000 people. I thank Dora Perry in my office. She has put in almost a fifth staff person in the Office of Human Relations supporting the Human Rights Commissions, going to many, many meetings, and being my right-hand woman, which is absolutely amazing, and I am blessed by that also. Thank you to the police. Thank you for being here this morning and for the conversations that are happening on every level that we don't hear about when we're discussing the independent police review or some of the tragedies that are happened. This is part of the rest of the picture, and again, we're just scraping the surface that there's a lot of good things happening in Portland. So thank you for taking the time to come to tell us. Thank you for your story. Thank you for sharing your experiences. That is part of the wonderful complexion that we are as Portlanders, that the many different colors in the fabric of our society makes us a richer place, and we need to celebrate that and encourage the processes to continue to move forward and to be expanded. We are only just starting in this work, and we all recognize that. So I'm going to be looking for ways to further support the work of the Human Rights Commission and all of the great programs in the Office of Human Relations. Again, thank you to Marilisa Johnson for your leadership in some very trying times. You wouldn't think that we could have made this much progress in the middle of a recession, and when so many people are out of work and desperate for putting food on their tables. I think this may be an example of how volunteers have recognized the needs that must be taken care of, especially in a recession, and that many others have recognized that we will float or sink together. We cannot be a whole society where some are successful and prosperous and safe and others are not. And so your work in the Human Rights Commission is greatly appreciated, and thank you for bringing this report. I'm supposed to move the report, right?
Yes.
I move that we accept the report.
Second.
And
now you can vote.
Now I can vote aye on, and with great honor.
Fish.
Thank you. I want to thank each of the members of the commission for being with us today and for the very powerful presentation. I believe in my tenure on the council, it's the first time when we've had an annual report that we've actually heard from as many of the commissioners with stories accompanying the report. And, you know, it's one thing to read a report, but that can be quite dry. To actually to hear from you and to hear your passion and your stories as well is very powerful. So I think it's obviously made a big impact on us, and I hope many people who are watching this or listening to this as well. So thank you. I think Randy said it best when he singled out Amanda for, our praise for being the champion on council for this whole endeavor. Tom Potter was a champion, and now Amanda is our champion. And as I've learned, nothing really gets done around here without a champion on council. And so thank you, Amanda, for all the time and commitment that you and your team have put into this. I want to just say something about Danita, and it actually relates to what we heard today from two people who testified, but what we at council hear on a regular basis, which is we like to think that we are working earnestly to make progress. And frankly, it'd be hard to get up every morning if we didn't think that every day we're doing something to get to a better place. But that's different than saying we have solved our problems. But we still need to have that sense of inspiration that comes from every day believing that you're making a difference. Well, every day you're making a difference. I think all my colleagues here believe every day sincerely we're trying to make a difference. But what we often hear from is people that are impatient with the pace of progress. And that's very powerful. That's both protected by the First Amendment, and it's also very important that we not become complacent. Because, for example, we have a 10-year plan to end homelessness, but we've not ended homelessness. And there's an overlay of homelessness involving mental health that we as a community have not begun to really get our hands around. But the powerful point is we listen and we engage and we show respect and we try to make progress. And that brings me to Danita. Without going too deep into this, I just want to say that what I learned as Parks Commissioner when I took over a couple years ago is that there was some deep history and some significant miscommunication between two great communities. I'm referring, of course, to the Native American community and to the professionals that run our great system. And we have wonderful people who run our Parks Bureau. They're dedicated. They do lots of great work. And believe me, if you look at other cities, we have fewer resources and we're asked to do more. But there was, for want of a better term, there was a misunderstanding and we were talking past each other. And so I was invited to a listening session as a first step. And a listening session for an elected official is quite an experience because we're highly trained at jabbing, counterpunching, deflecting, shifting. And I'm not just talking about Randy. I'm talking about all of us. And it's sort of what you get ingrained in. So when you're told to come to a meeting and say nothing, but just to receive what is said and to listen earnestly and humbly to what is said and not be thinking about how do I respond, how do I question, how do I clarify. But listen, that's a very powerful thing. And it begins to open your mind and your heart to a different person's, a different experience, a different perspective. And from the listening session and through further dialogue came a very important event. And it just speaks to why I have such great confidence in Danita's leadership of this body, which was when we opened a park in South Waterfront. And it turns out there was a lot of controversy over the naming, the selection of the name, and also some commemorative things we did in Elizabeth Carruthers Park. And what Danita offered to do at that event was to speak and to speak at the ribbon cutting to the conflict that had been generated and to provide a historical context. And I didn't know what to expect, and I frankly did not know her that well. So, you know, she had the microphone. She could say whatever she want. What she did is she gave a very passionate and profound talk about the history of Native peoples predating the Carruthers, a lesson on really whose land this once was and how it changed, and a reminder that we need to be cognizant of that history at every time when we deal with our land. And I got more positive feedback from people who said that she had turned potentially a conflict into a learning opportunity for all of us, and it enriched the opening that you gave us this in a sense, a history lesson, but also you placed the whole event in a larger context. So that's what we're trying to do here. But it takes inspired leadership. So I just want to say, Danita, I thank you for all the work you've done, both on this body but independently, to help us get to a better place as a city and to continue that learning process. And again, to Commissioner Fritz for her leadership moving this forward. And it's a pleasure and honor to have your report today. And I thank you for your service. Aye.
Leonard?
Thank you. Aye. We do not have the necessary quorum to do the consent agenda, but there's been a request to pull item 140.
And
so we'll read.
And 141?
And 141? Is it 140 and 141, Matt?
Yes.
And this is usually where Matt Adams says that you're welcome to stay and watch Democracy in Action, but if you have other things, you're also fine to go. Thank you so much. And as a further reminder while you do to folks watching that if you're interested in participating in any of these programs, go to portlandonline.com and there's a link from my website.
So, Carla, can you read? Could you read items 140 and 141?
Mm-hmm. Item 140, authorize a contract and provide payment for construction of the Stark Inflow Controls Project, number E1003.
And did you do 141 too?
I'm sorry, 141. Authorize a contract and provide payment for construction of the Wellhead Sump Retrofit Phase 2 Stormwater Treatment Facilities, job number E07623.
Brief summary, Matt.
The first one is allowing us to go get a contract for Stark, Stark Street Inflow Control Project, estimated $621,000. That's a high high confidence, and that'll come back to us as a contract. In the second reading, I don't have the facts in front of me, but that is a second reading on that one.
141 yes. is a second reading. That's a the purpose of the proposed legislation is to authorize a contract with the lowest responsible bidder to construct the Wellhead Sump Retrofit Phase 2 Stormwater Treatment Facilities Project. Project is needed to remove sediments and pollutants that are being transported into the Columbia Slough by stormwater runoff from public streets. Estimated cost is $770,000. Level of confidence is high. Thank you to Stu in my office for providing me that information. Carla, please call the roll.
Is this on 141?
140.
140 first, and then 41.
140 goes to a
second reading.
I'm sorry, 141.
Fritz.
Aye.
Bish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Thank you.
And 140 does move to a second reading. Thank you. 142, Carl.
Vacate a portion of Southeast Bush Street and a portion of Southeast 100th Avenue, subject to certain conditions and reservations, and designate a portion of Portland Parks and Recreation property for water facility purposes and assign it to the Portland Water Bureau.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lance Lindahl. I'm with the Bureau of Transportation Right-of-Way Acquisition Section. I'm here today to introduce the street vacation case of Southeast Bush Street and a portion of Southeast 100th Avenue. This is a city-initiated street vacation to facilitate construction of the Emergency Coordination Center in Southeast Portland, and it calls for the vacation of a one-block segment of Bush Street and a half-block segment of Southeast 100th Avenue, and Southeast Bush Street will be relocated as a part of the ECC project.
Great. Thank you. Questions?
There was a several concerns raised by the neighborhood in this process, and as an aside, I really appreciate that this street vacation is coming after the conditional use review, so that's the right way to do a street vacation is you get the land use issues taken care of in the conditional use process, and then you're coming with a street vacation, so thank you for that. My first question is, did anybody appeal the land use decision in December?
Wendy Colley from Transportation Development Review is here and can probably speak more effectively to that.
I'm seeing a no.
Yeah,
but that was not appealed.
Yeah. I do not believe so.
Yeah.
There were some issues that the neighborhood is concerned about, loss of on-street parking spaces. And I'm wondering if there could be some capacity that the current condition of approval allows parking in the new lot for neighbors after hours and on weekends. Mm-hmm. Is there any capacity for having some of those spaces be available to a small number of those spaces? I think it's four spaces that are lost from the on-street.
That's my understanding as well, yeah, four.
Could there be any designation either there or maybe even in the park or for some designated spaces for neighbors to be able to park during the workday? There isn't a safety concern with parking there during the workday, right? It's more of a capacity issue.
That's my understanding. Both Dave Gray and Jim Coker are here today. They're much more familiar with the specifics of the project, and I'm hoping they can address that.
I would point out it's the facility that we will have the Emergency Operations Center at, so I would imagine there'd be some issues of security at some point.
Well, they're already allowed to park there. It's not the secure parking lot. It's the open parking lot. Mm-hmm. And so there is an agreement as a condition of approval of this that the neighbors get to park in that lot after 5 p.m. and on weekends and holidays. Since it's a 24/7, 365 facility, I can't imagine that would have been approved had it been a mm-hmm. concern for security.
I'm just saying during the day, I mean, I saw the same email, and the Neighborhood Association supports the project. Mm-hmm. Did raise some concerns, but I guess I'm not comfortable us making changes to a process that involved some negotiations here, because I think we have to be careful that the facility is one open, available to city personnel, because we could have a whatever that would require a number of people to drive out there, including the council. mm-hmm. and parks. I don't know what the give and take has been up till now, and I'm a little reluctant to change that.
Right, yeah.
Dave?
I'm going to have Dave Gray from the Water Bureau and Jim Coker from Office Management Finance come speak to this, because I know there has been a complex set of negotiations with the neighborhood on this very issue.
Commissioners, good morning. My name is David Gray. I'm a project manager working on the Emergency Coordination Center for the city. Jim Coker.
Jim Coker with Office of Management Finance, project manager.
So to answer your question, Commissioner Fritz, you know, the availability of parking for park users during the day, in our experience during the work week, during those hours, there's ample parking available in the park itself.
I think the concerns were for the neighbors who were concerned that there would be so much parking by employees on the streets, and we are losing four on-street parking spaces. They're not sure that there's going to be the capacity for them to park their cars.
You know, the process that we've gone through is we've been working with the current staff out at the 911 center and trying to work through different scenarios to maximize use of on-site parking. One example is we had a condition where we had several of the city facility service trucks that were parked in the north parking lot. And it was just just the shift change that when the 911 call takers were coming to work for the day shift, all of those trucks were still parked in the north parking lot, only for a short period of time before that staff came on board and went out into the field to do their work. So what we've done is we're looking for all kinds of opportunities. So, like during the construction, when there's going to be there will be congestion in the neighborhood, those service trucks will park out on 99th Avenue where it's currently no parking, therefore allowing all of the 911 staff to maximize use of that north parking lot. So, you know, it's going to be a work in progress, and that we're looking for opportunities to provide as much on-street parking for the neighbors as we can. It's our intention to be a good neighbor in the neighborhood. So another example is we had an opportunity. We started out with a net loss of 9 on-street parking spots, and we were able to find an opportunity by widening a short section of Southeast Bush between 100th and 101st, we're actually able to pick up 5 additional on-street parking spots. So, you know, we've really done everything that we can, and we will continue to look for opportunities to try to find, you know, always try to maximize on-street parking.
Are there any safety concerns with having neighbors parking in the south lot?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, the way that the south parking lot is designed, we will have half of the parking lot will be a secured lot where we can always have the opportunity through pass keys to secure that area. The south half of that parking lot is going to be open and unlocked at all hours, although it will be, you know, patrolled by our security staff.
And that's where neighbors can park after hours and on weekends.
Yes.
Could there be, I'm concerned because the approval criterion that I have to vote on for the street vacation is that there's no need for the street for transportation needs, to me includes parking. Mm-hmm. So if we're saying there's a need for 4 more spaces, then I'm wondering how I can vote to approve the street vacation while knowing that, in fact, we're losing 4 on-street parking spaces. So one thing I was wondering is whether we could see how the parking goes. I mean, could there be, for instance, 4 spaces in the unsecured lot that would be available to neighbors if they weren't being used by facility staff? Could we designate 4 spots that, if not being used, that those would be a no-tow? For example, if you said you've got security patrolling during the day, to make sure that neighbors are not parking in that lot?
That's something that we can certainly explore. And we are very aware of this issue. We've tried very hard to gain as many on-street and off-street parking spaces as possible. A couple of things I might add to what Dave was mentioning is the south lot, as it exists now, is informally used by the public during evenings and weekends. A lot of people don't know that it is available for their use. As part of the proposed project, we are going to put a sign up at the entry to that parking lot in English and in Spanish, making it very clear to everyone that it is available during those off hours. So that should help maximize the use of that lot, which would reduce the effect of parking on the streets to the community. Another thing we are doing that is part of the condition of approval through the conditional use process is we are issuing a policy to all employees of both the existing 911 center as well as the proposed ECC center, asking them to use the north parking lot as much as they can to reduce the demand on that south parking lot so that anyone that wants to use the south parking lot can use it. And we do need a space for visitors to the building, people that come to the building for meetings, handicap, that kind of thing. And we find that oftentimes, particularly if the employees that are currently parking in the south lot do park in the north lot, that there would be space available. We will not, the city would not tow people that are parking there on an interim basis if there are spots available and they're using the park for some period of time. To designate spots for the public, that's something that we can certainly look into.
You could look at putting visitor sign up
for
spaces. That would satisfy my concern. And also if there could be some kind of 6-month or a year follow-up with the two neighborhood associations after the center's in operation to check back and see, you know, how's it going.
We, as another condition of approval to the conditional use process, we have something like that in place, particularly for the on-street parking along the new Bush Street alignment to revisit with the community to see how that's working for them so that we can make any revisions to that as well.
What's the time frame for that?
The time frame is not defined in the conditions of approval.
Okay.
So that could be...
So it might be at the request of the neighborhood associations.
I think that's how it's worded now, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Then I'm satisfied. Thank you very much for your diligent work, and thank you for agreeing to look into the visitor spots. That takes care of my concern.
Further questions? Anybody signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Carla, please call the roll.
This is a non-emergency.
Pass it to second reading.
Thank you.
143, second reading.
Authorize revenue bonds to finance a portion of the cost of the Selwood Bridge replacement project.
Please call the roll.
Thank you to Mayor Adams and Chair Kogan for reaching agreements on this funding plan and Eric Johansson for his leadership in funding large projects in the most affordable way. Aye.
Bish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye. 144, second reading.
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Bish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye. Council's adjourned till 2 p.m. today.
Carla, who's going to be here this afternoon?
Dan, you, and Amanda.
Dan
is back?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're reading his?